people have certain ways that they like things done. And that's normal. Everybody has their way of doing things. If you're to say, what do you like on your hot dog? You know, some people, I like mustard only. I like ketchup and mustard. I like nothing. I like onions, ketchup, mustard, chili, pork rinds, and a little bit of sriracha. That's just me. Now, it's a little crazy to then have the reaction if someone says to you, I don't like it that way. To be upset by that. To be like, what? How dare you not like it my way? But that's how people are. And that's fine. Everybody can have different ways of how they like things and how they handle things. It's how your belief system interacts with others' belief systems where the problems tend to come in, because a lot of us like to cling to our specific version of it. And if somebody else has a different version of it, some of us are more gracious than others in accepting that. Problems arise when the graciousness and the understanding of other people's are not there. Now, a hot dog is one thing. It's a whole other thing when you have a haunting going on and you're wanting it to cease or slow down or just live comfortably together or whatnot. Sometimes very aggressive stances are taken. Sometimes very peaceful stances are taken, and sometimes they work and sometimes they don't. In either case, sometimes I think we just need to tune ourselves in a little bit more to how would the other person feel? How would that ghost feel? Sometimes there's winning. Sometimes there's losing. Sometimes it's not about winning or losing. It's simply about finding the right direction and finding the peace. You can be right all you want, but if it creates chaos, how good is that? On today's episode of Real Ghost Stories Online, we're talking about handling the dead. Does a belief system dictate how to get rid of a ghost or a haunting, and are some more effective than others? Is a firm or aggressive attitude towards a ghost the best way to get them to do what you want, or is it better to treat them with calm, kindness, and grace? And what's it like to have a psychic connection to spirits? We hear the account of one man who hears from the dead on a regular basis. Their stories and more in EPP bonus episode number 319 of Real Ghost Stories Online. My name is Tony Bruschi. Stay with us. Belief systems are an interesting thing. Belief systems can very much affect a paranormal occurrence. Sometimes a belief system will very much dictate how to get rid of a haunting or a paranormal experience. Sometimes it will dictate the very practices, the very words being said. Sometimes it just simply dictates what all those involved in the activity need to feel and believe as a collective for it to be effective. In our next story, we're going to hear about a Native American system and some observations directly from an individual who's part of one of the many, many communities and helps put us in some perspective just how varied belief systems can be and just how real the paranormal can exist side by side with us in our world. Take a listen. Greetings. I'm an American Indian and an EPP. I've been listening to the podcast for the last few months and have enjoyed the stories and the audiobook. I'm writing to share a bit of knowledge, a few observations, and a few stories. Currently, according to the Bureau of Indian Affairs, there are 574 federally recognized tribes within the U.S. That does not include state recognized. Each tribe is a sovereign nation and can be quite different and distinct from other tribes. The belief systems can vary widely. This is important, as often when American Indians are referenced, it appears that there are maybe one or two tribes, when in fact there are many. The first observation I'd like to share is the use of Indian burial grounds. I find this funny, to be frank. Not all tribal nations within the U.S. bury the dead. It really depends on the region and tribal nation. The second is the use of practices derived from American Indians. So many times these practices are attributed to natives, but how they are used are not in alignment with tribal practices and ceremonies. This can be a sticky subject due to cultural appropriation, as well as natives allowed freedom of religion relatively recently in 1978. Lastly, how American Indians view paranormal phenomena is based on tribal beliefs, which tend to not follow mainstream society. For example, to some tribes, what are ghosts of dead people may not be viewed the same. They may be viewed as a natural phenomena or a specific manifestation of a belief or something else entirely. I am a Lakota Sioux and was born and raised on a reservation in South Dakota. I'll not divulge band for privacy reasons. Most of my family still reside on the reservation, and I go home as often as I can. Our belief system is rather specific when it comes to the paranormal. Many times what mainstream society will label a ghost, we will label a spirit. Now, spirits are not people who were once alive. They are their own entity. They do what they were proposed to do by the Creator. As such, they're doing what they are to do, and that may be experienced by a person, but what is observed is seen through what the person knows or understands. Basically, the person sees what they will and know and be able to understand. Not all things will make sense, and that's because the spirit is not a person, but is more than a person and doing something that a person may not understand. Sometimes people who die may get lost, but they are lost because they're being held here due to family. Once they can find their way, they'll return to where we come from. That is the belief. We all go back to where we come from, but spirits are here doing what they are supposed to do. Growing up on the reservation brought many experiences related to the paranormal. It was part of life. Many stories were shared. I recall one story told to me by my grandmother when I was a child. Many years ago, a non-native who came to the reservation to hunt, he wanted to hunt in an awfully specific set of hills and buttes. He was told by the people not to go there. That is where little people tend to be. He did not listen. He went anyway. Days went by and people started to ask where he went, and soon, as a small group of men went looking for him, they followed his trail and found remains of a campsite, just a tent and some clothes. They yelled for the man and soon heard him responding. They followed the sound and found him tied up in a tree. The men asked the man how he ended up in the tree and who did that to him. The man said on the first night of camping, he kept hearing strange noises and could see moving lights in the distance. He tried to see what they were, but they would disappear when he approached. The next morning, as he hunted, he would have rocks and things thrown at him and hear people speaking, but could not make out what was being said. He tried to find where the talking was coming from and who was throwing things at him, but could not find anyone or anything. On the second night, he again heard talking and other noises, but could not find the source. As he got ready to sleep, he had more rocks thrown at him and his staff was being moved around. He then got angry and started yelling. As he was yelling, he saw people about a foot in height step out of the trees. They were pointing at him and began to yell at him as they surrounded him. He could not understand what they were saying. They then started closing in on him. He did not know what to do, so he grabbed his gun and started shooting at the little people, but could not track the aim at them as they moved too quickly. He shot over and over, but hit only dirt. Not knowing what to do, he took off running. The little people chased him, tripping him, causing him to fall. He was then tied up and taken up the tree and left there. The man said he had been in the tree for a few days, wondering if anyone would find him, thinking he was going to die up in that tree. The group of men cut him down and took him back to town where he was able to leave. The non-native man was told he was warned not to go back there, but did now and understood why. The man said he would never come back and left. He was never seen again. A few days later, the group of men went back to the campsite to make offerings and ask the little people for forgiveness for the intrusion. The area was marked and left alone. Even now, that plot of land stays untouched. Of all the events that I've witnessed, the one that currently pops into my mind is from 1996. My mother was driving me back to university, and we were about 100 miles out on a quiet back road. It was a fall day in the mid-afternoon. The sun was bright. There were a few clouds in the sky. Overall, it was a beautiful day for a drive with just me and my mom. We're out in a very rural area, passing fields with tree belts scattered throughout. On a long stretch of flat road, my mom noticed a figure in the distance. At first, she said it was a man in the field to our left. When I looked, I saw a tall figure. But as we got closer, the figure was taller than any person. It was stepping over the fences. My mom slowed down so we could watch the figure. The figure was black. No discernible clothing or facial features could be seen. It was tall and very thin as it walked, the legs stretched long as it lopped over the ground. Eventually, my mom came to a stop and we watched it from the highway. It was about 20 yards in front of us. We watched as it stepped over the fence to our right, stepped across the highway, and then over the fence to our left in four strides. We watched it walk into the field and continue into the field and continue to the tree belt and beyond. Not once did the figure stop or look at us, just crossed our path and continued. There were no other cars at the time. I recall being shocked and fascinated, but not scared. Fear came later. My mom and I looked at each other, and my mom sped off. I watched the figure in the rear windshield until I could not see it. I asked my mom what she thought we had seen, and she said she did not know, but that whatever it was, we were supposed to see it. Months later, when I was home, my mom and I told her cousin about what we saw. He asked why my mom stopped and did not speed up, and she said because she would have gotten closer to whatever it was, and that was not something she wanted. Maybe that was what was supposed to happen. So in all the subsequent trips back and forth between home and university, we never took that road again. Lastly, I'll share a story told to me by my sister's ex-husband. This was in the mid-1990s during the summer. He had just gotten off work after pulling a night shift during his training to be a police officer. He came into the house white as a sheet and was crying. We asked him what happened and he told us the following. There was a party at the house in one of the outlying communities. The people had a cookout earlier and as night fell, they went into the house to continue the company. Not long after nightfall, the people began to hear banging on the walls and doors. Some of the men went out to see who was outside causing the commotion. That's when they saw something standing in the distance. It was a figure of a man. His face and hands were stark white. He was wearing what looked like a wide-brimmed steampipe hat and a long cloak that billowed and moved around him despite there being extraordinary little wind. The men screamed and ran back to the house, shouting and locking the doors and telling everyone to close and lock the windows and close the curtains. And they did. That is where we're going to pause this week's EPP bonus episode of Real Ghost Stories Online Preview Edition to hear the whole thing. Support our program. Become an EPP, an extra podcast person. We just do the one episode a week that is behind closed doors because, well, we need to keep the show on the air. So if you like the program and you want some of the best ghost stories, please help support our program. Become an EPP, an extra podcast person by going to ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/realghoststories to get this episode in its entirety and all 319 EPP bonus episodes in their entirety as well. Some of the best ghost stories you will ever hear, guaranteed. You get our ebook, you get our audiobook, a whole lot of great extras there. Ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/realghoststories. Sign up for a full year and get 1 month free as well on an annual membership. So check that out and help keep Real Ghost Stories Online alive.